Now we're holding on Tzedek Tes Amud Beis, the fifth line of the widest lines. Continuing on, we were learning about yesterday the importance of that a person has to learn Torah and realize that every detail in it is important and not be like Menashe ben Chizkiah and think that there are parts in it that are unnecessary, etc. Chas v'shalom. So now the Gemara continues in this vein. Amar Alexandri, Kola Osik b'Torah Lishma, when a person occupies himself with Torah Lishma, we're learning Lishma means that he's learning just because in order to be close to Hashem, not because he wants to be rich, not because he wants to be famous and have a good name, and not because of other kinds of ulterior motives like that, but just because this is how he connects with Hashem. Meisim Shalom with Pamalia Shamayla over Pamalia Shamata. Then he creates peace within the higher Pamalia and the lower Pamalia. Pamalia Shamayla means the Malachim, Pamalia Shamata means all the creatures of Hashem on earth. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, O Yachsek b'ma'uzi, Oy means or, but here it means if, Yachsek b'ma'uzi, he, the Jewish people, would hold on firmly to my strength, ma'uzi, my strength. Yaseh shalom li, he would make shalom for me, shalom yaseh li, shalom he would make for me. So the double expression shalom, and that one of them has yaseh before it, and the other one after it, represents two different kinds of shalom, one on earth and one in Shemayim. What do we mean by making peace in Pamali Shamayla, Pamali Shamata? Of course, there's a whole bunch of different explanations what that means. One interesting one is, Yad Ramah says, you know, when a person does an Aveda, then it causes the Malach Makatrig to be created up above, and eventually that becomes, he gets punished through that, and vice versa, when he does a mitzvah, then it creates a good Malach. So now he makes Shalom in the sense the Malachim don't want to have to be the agents to punish a person, they would rather be able to be the agents through which a person gets reward from the Eivishter. So like this, when he learns Torah Lishma and deserves great reward from Hashem for that, then therefore, so now the Malachim are happy that they don't have to be used as agents to punish him. And down here, there's also happiness because Tamid Chachamim bring peace into the world. There's many, many places in Chassidus where it talks about this idea of Pamali Shamayla, Pamali Shamata, and there's many different explanations, many different points that are said in different places of what we mean by the Maila and Mata. We mean within the person's neshama down here and within his Shodash and neshama up above. We mean Yehuda Yilah and Yehuda Tata, the different ways in which we bring the Eivishter's unity into the world. We mean Chesed versus Chesed and Bina being joined together by Das and making the Moichin that through which where the Eivishter, so to speak, thinks things into existence, make that real in our world, bring it down into Midas, and so on and so forth. Or Levik, that Eva's father, has a couple of different explanations, has a couple of different places where he talks about that you have the two different aspects within Torah itself, Nigla and Nister, Tertus and Nigla, and Tertus and Kabbalah, and these two Sholems represent learning the Torah on those two different levels, and many other things. The Gemara continues, Rava Amakila Bona Paltin and Shamayla v'Shamata. A person who learns Torah l'shma is as if he built the palace up above in Shamayim, and the palace here on earth, meaning Shamayim, meaning heaven and earth. Kenema, as the pasuk says, Va'osim dvarei b'ficha, I place my words in your mouth, or with seil yodi kisisicha, and I've covered you with the shadow of my hand, Hashem says, l'ntoya shamayim, to plant the earth, v'lisoid aretz, and to found the earth. So in other words, the Torah, which I put in your mouth for you to learn with your mouth, when you learn it the way you're supposed to, then you're founding and building heaven and earth. Omer Shlokish, or on the side here, it's Omer Shlokish, or in the brackets, Rabbi Yechanan Omer, Af Megan Al Kol Olam Kolay. Furthermore, he protects the entire world. Shenema, as the pasuk says, V'tzel Yodik Kizisicha. Hashem says, I've covered you with the shadow of my hand. The shadow of Hashem's hand, so to speak, represents Hashem's protection of the whole world. So therefore, when a person is learning Torah Lishma, then he's bringing that protection to the whole world.
And is it covered over? Kisisicha?
No, kisisicha, yeah, means I've covered you. In other words, like you have, as if there's always dangers that are ready to fall down on a person, and then you have, so to speak, Hashem's hand hold standing in the way and protecting him from that. So therefore, such a person brings protection to the whole world. That is creating the heaven and earth is because we know the whole heaven and earth was only created for the sake of the Torah, so now when he's learning Torah Lishma, then he's accomplishing the purpose of the world, and therefore he's bringing all these brachas to the world. The Levi, Amma, Levi adds, Af Makadav HaGaula, furthermore, a person who learns Torah Lashma is bringing the Gaula closer. Shenema, as that same pasuk continues, the Lema Latzian, Ami Ata, and to say to Tzion, to the Jewish people, you are my nation. There's, by the way, a Medrash that says that, usually the word Sion refers to Yerushalayim or the Beis Mikdash. This is one place where we see clearly that the word Sion refers to the Jewish people at large. There's many Maamar Chassidus that talk about the deeper meaning behind that. What does that mean? That we Jewish people are called Sion. It's Sion Meloshin Mitzuyan, meaning something distinguished in the world. And it refers to the Yichidish of the Nefesh, and it refers to a distinctive part of a Yid that always remains a Yid.
Like Mitzuyan.
Like Mitzuyan, yeah. The Gemara continues, Amar Rish Lakish, Kolom Olamidus Ben Chaveira Torah, a person who teaches somebody else's child Torah, Mala Olav HaKosev Kilo Asoy. The Pasuk considers it as though he made that person. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, that read by Avraham and Sarav, as a Nefesh, Asher also B'choran, the souls that they made in Choran. Now, how do you make a soul? It means that they brought them close to the Eivishtir by teaching them about Lakos, by teaching them about Mitzvahs, so therefore it's considered that they made them. In fact, Rashi brings that Targum Onkelos translates it, the Dishabidula Raisa B'choran, that these are the souls that they subjugated to the Torah in Choran. So these are people who, while they were living in Choran, they talked to people and convinced them about the truth of the Edishtan to abandon Avodah Zarah, and they subjugated to the Torah, them to the Torah, to follow in the Torah, and in that sense, it's considered like they made them. The Gemara continues, Rabbi Eliezer, or Rabbi Lazar, really, it says, Rabbi Lazar says, Kivasan the Divrei Torah. Not only that, a person who teaches somebody else Torah, it's as if he himself made the words of Torah, because now he discovers new dimensions of Torah. So Rashi says, well, the Kilo Asoy, no, that's something else, actually, Rashi's referring to soon, but it's considered as though he made the Torah in the sense because he comes up with new Chidushim in Torah, which Wim Marsha explains, that's what it means, Asoy, that he made the Torah in the sense he comes with new Chidushim Torah through teaching the Talmidim, as we have the famous expression, Mitamidya Yosin the Kolam, a person learns most of all from his Talmidim, so when he teaches somebody else Torah, then it's as if he made the Torah by bringing out these Chidushim that were latent in it all along.
And his strength of the Torah?
Kilasan means he made them. I mean, maybe includes strengthen as well, but yeah, strengthen suggests that they already existed. He strengthened them. Makes them is like he brings something new into existence that didn't exist before. Which is, again, because you have these ideas are latent in the Torah. They're existing there, but they haven't been brought out yet, but now he's able to mechadish them as a result of talking with his Talmidim, and in that sense, therefore, it can be said that he made the Torah. Like when a person takes raw materials and makes them into a keli. As the Pasuk says, you should guard the words of this covenant, the Torah, and you should do them. The word vasisem also means to make them. So when you observe the Torah by learning it the way you're supposed to, then you're making the Torah. Then the Gemara continues. Rava says, furthermore, it's as if the person made himself. Before he learned Torah, he wasn't really on the level of Adam. Now that he learned Torah, he brought himself to the level of Adam. That same pasuk says you should do them, you should make them. Altikri osam ala atem. Don't read osam with a vav. It's written in the Torah without the vav, after all. So read it atem, you. That when a person learns Torah, he makes himself. Now this is not necessarily when Hamalamidus ben Chaveira Torah. This is actually just in general when a person learns Torah. So in fact, in the Gemara you have before Rish Lakish and before Rabbi Lazar and before Rava, each of them there's a little note from the Vilna Gaon from Agoyes Hagra that he says to flip around the order of them. He wants to put the statement of Rava first, Kilo Asan La'atzmai first, because then it would be continuation of what we said in general when a person learns Torah Lishma, all the things that he accomplished, and then we would have the two statements about when he teaches somebody else's child Torah. The Gemara continues, Omer Abba Baho Kolam Ases Chaveira L'Dvar Mitzvah. When a person makes somebody else do a mitzvah, he convinces him and tells him to do it. Mal Olav HaKosev Kilo Asah. Then Hashem counts it, the Pasuk counts it, as though the person himself did it, the one who told the other one to do it. Shenemar, as we find, Hashem tells Moshe, Umatcha Sheikisa Boyas HaYer, take along when you're going to tell, when you're going to hit the rock to make water come out of it, and at the end of Parashas Peshalach, your staff that you, with which you hit the river to cause Makas Dam and Svadeya, then you should take it along. What do you mean? Moshe Hikohu, Moshe didn't hit. As we know, Moshe didn't hit the river because it had saved him as a baby, etc., etc. Balai Aaron Hikohu, and Aaron hit it by both Makas Dam and Svadeya. Ela loy malach, so it comes to tell you, kolam ha'ases chaver l'dvam mitzvah, that when a person tells somebody else to do a dvam mitzvah, ma'al olav chosif, ki l'asah, then the Torah counts it as though he did it. So since Moshe told Aaron to hit it, then it's credited to Moshe as though he himself did it. So that was all a digression talking about the greatness of learning and teaching Torah and causing other people to do mitzvahs. Now, going back to in the Mishnah, we had a list of people who lost their place in the Olam Haba, and one of them is Apikoros. So let's define that. We also had on Omer Aleph as well. We had the pasuk Yidvar Hashem Boza, that a person mocked the word of Hashem, and we had several different definitions of what it was. And one of them is that one of them is an apikoros. So we have to define more precisely what an apikoros is. Now, where does the word apikoros come from in general? There's two major understandings among Mephoshim. One is that it comes from the Shoresh Pokar, pei kuf resh, which means to go out and be chutzpedik against what's supposed to be. A person has to have a certain derech eretz. For Torah, an apikoros is somebody who pokar, he goes in and goes out and is chutzpedik towards the Torah. The other explanation is there was a famous Greek philosopher named Epicurus, where he taught that a person's purpose in the world is just for pleasure, gashmiastic of pleasure, and he developed a whole school of thought and a whole school of philosophy around that. So people who live their lives that way are named Epicurus, named after him. So Rav Chanina D'Amri Tavayu Zame Vaza Tamid Chacham. It refers to a person who mocks a Tamid Chacham. So the Shoresh Pokar is also related to the word Hefker, is also related to that first explanation of Pokar, meaning Chutzpedik, and all when it comes, it's related to the word Hefker, as in if he says it's up for grabs to anybody who wants. So now when he's Mevaza, the Talmud Chacham, then he's treating him like Hefker, he's treating him in a way of Pokar, and in a way where he loses his place in Olam Haba for that. Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Shimon Levi, Ami Zam Vaza Chaveda b'fnei Talmud Chacham. Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Shimon Levi say it refers to a person who makes fun of somebody else in front of the Talmud Chacham. The point being, in other words, that he doesn't have a lack of respect for the Talmud Chacham, because otherwise he would speak more respectfully to somebody else in the presence of the Talmud Chacham. Now, we talked about the Megala Ponim Batorda, Shaloi Kahalocha, which is the person who is chutzpidik against the Torah itself. So now the Gemara is going to point out what's the interplay between these two things. It actually explains that the Megala Ponim Batorda is supposed to be more serious than the Apikoros. The Apikoros is just acting in a chutzpidik way. The Megala Ponim Batorda is actually brazenly going in and misinterpreting the Torah, like we talked about yesterday about Menashe. So that's the Gemara says, Bishleim Alaman Omer Hamavaza Chaveri B'fnei Tamid Chacham Apikoros Havi, according to the second opinion of Yechon and Rabbi Shimon Levi, that if a person makes fun of somebody else in front of a Tamid Chacham and shows that he doesn't care about the covet of that Tamid Chacham, then we can say Mavaza Tamid Chacham Atzmai, when he mocks the Tamid Chacham himself, is more serious. We can call him Megalaponim Batorda Shalai Kaalocha Havi. Such a person can be described as somebody who is Megalaponim Batorda, who is chutzpidik against the Torah itself. Because the Talmud Chacham himself is identified with the Torah. The Gemara even has an expression in a different place in Kiddushin, how foolish are people who stand up in honor of a Sefer Torah, but they don't stand up in honor of a Talmud Chacham. The Talmud Chacham is a living Sefer Torah. So fine, then in that case, then you have both of them are defined. El amanda omer apikoros, mevaza Talmud Chacham atzmei apikoros avi. But if you say that the one who mocks the Talmud Chacham himself is only an apikoros, which is a lower level, then what would be an example of, and according to him, there's nothing wrong with, and according to him, not there's nothing wrong, but at least making fun of somebody else in front of the Talmud Chacham does not brand a person with any of these names. So according to that opinion, according to Rav and Rav Chanina, Megala Ponim HaTorah may have, then what is an example of a Megala Ponim HaTorah? And the answer is, as we looked before, Kigan Menashe ben Chizkia, as we had the example of Menashe, who was publicly quoting Psukim and mocking them and saying that they have no usefulness. The Gemara says the Ikka Demasni La Sefer. Now, thus far we had that this machloikas between the two sets of Chachamim, Rab and Rav Chanina, and Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yisrael ben Levi, is referring to the Reisha of the Mishnah, or to the Reisha of the Braisa, which mentioned about the Apikoros. Now, we also have the Braisa had continued with the statement of Rabbi Elazar Hamudoi saying what he says in Pirkei Avos about a group of people, Machalos Akodshim, Vamavaza Samoides, and several other people who lose their place in Olam Haba. So some learn this machloikas as referring to that second part of the Braisa. That when Rabbi Elazar Hamudoi, now Rabbi Elazar Hamudoi had in his list Megalaponim Atorah, he did not have Apikoros in his list. He said, "I'm a chalas a kodshim, a person who desecrates kodshim by eating them or truma when he's tomei, and vaza as a moedus, a person who treats the moedus cholamoed lightly and does malach on it as if it was a regular weekday. I'm malvin pnei chaver berabim, I'm meifah brisle shalabarom avinu, etc." And he said, "I'm a galaponim atoda shalay kalach." So now on that, according to the second version, is where the machloikas is. Rab and Rab Chanina Amri zamavaza tamet chacham, that Rab and Rab Chanina both say that megalaponim atoda in Rabbi Elazar Hamudoi's list refers to somebody who mocks the Talmud Chacham, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yisrael ben Levi, Ami Zama Vazes Chaveri, Bifnei Talmud Chacham, and Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yisrael ben Levi say it's somebody who mocks somebody else in front of the Talmud Chacham. So let's also analyze that. So according to that, Mavazah the Talmud Chacham himself is called Megalaponim HaTorah. So then mocking somebody else in front of the Talmud Chacham Apikoros Havi is branded as an Apikoros, which is not as bad as Megalaponim HaTorah Shalek HaAlocha, and in fact, Rabbi Elazar Hamudoi does not have him on his list. But if you say that one who makes fun of somebody else in front of the Talmud Chacham and doesn't have respect for the Talmud Chacham in that way is called Megalaponim HaTorah, and according to Rabbi Elazar Hamudoi's list, he loses his place in Olam Haba, then Apikoros Kivein Man, then according to that, what would be considered an Apikoros, where it's a bad thing, and the Mishnah had put him in its list, but Rabbi Elazar Hamudoi had not. And the answer is, Amar Rav Yosef, to go in Hani de Amri, an example of an Apikoros, according to that opinion, would be the kind of people who say, Maya Hanu Lon Rabbanon, what good are the Talmud Chachamim doing for us? Lididhu Koru, Lididhu Tanu. They learn for themselves, and they teach for themselves. They don't realize, as we learned before, that learning Torah is beneficial for the whole world. So a person like that, who thinks that, the bench kvetcher is fine, let them do their own thing, but they're not contributing anything to society, then such a person, according to this opinion, is branded as an Apikoros. So in a way, Marashal says we can call them Megalaponim HaTorah Shalai Ka'alocha as well, because after all, we learned before how important Torah is for the functioning of the world, and we have various other psukim that say that. But according to the other opinion, such a person is not a Megalaponim HaTorah Shalai Ka'alocha, which both on Mishnah and Rabbi Elazar Hamudoi both place him among the category of Ein Lam Chelek Olam Haba. He is an Apikoros. On Mishnah had put him in the category of Ein Lam Chelek Olam Haba, but Rabbi Elazar Hamudoi had not. Okay. The Gemara is going to give, now the Gemara gives several examples. So Amale Abaya. So now Abaya asks, so you're telling me then that somebody who thinks that learning Torah is not accomplishing something useful for the world. So you're telling me that such a person is an Apikoros, not Megalaponim HaTorah. Well, why is that? Hi, Megalaponim HaTorah Namihu. Isn't such a person also misinterpreting the Torah brazenly? Because after all, you have a pasuk. Im loy v'risi yomim v'layla. If it weren't for my covenant by day and by night, which refers to Torah, which we learn both by day and by night, chukas shemayim va'aretz leisamti. Then Hashem says, I would never have made the laws of heaven and earth. So therefore, it's very clear from that learning Torah sustains and keeps the whole world running. So if a person doesn't realize that important truth, that he's more than Apikoros, he is megalaponim v'torah shalei ka'alocha, because he's ignoring a befeidish pasuk. Omer of Nachman Yitzchok, Mehochanami Shvamina. And furthermore, Rabbi Nachman Yitzchok says, here's another place where you can learn this from. Shenemar, Venosasi Lacholam Makam Ba'avodam. Hashem tells Avraham, when Avraham is pleading for Sodom, if there are 50 people there, then I'll save the whole place for their sake. So we see that the tzaddikim, the tzaddikim, protects others. So if a person doesn't believe that concept, then he is a Megalaponim HaTorah Shalei Ka'alocha, because he's denying what it says in Kli Upsukim. So the Gemara says, fine, you're right. Saying that is, in fact, Megalaponim HaTorah Shalei Ka'alocha, according to either opinion. Rather, Ella, what would be an example of an Apikoros? Kigun de Yosef Kamei Rabbe, where a person is sitting in front of his Rebbe, v'nofel eshmaita b'duch da'achrini, and then he wants to mention a topic in Torah that was mentioned elsewhere in the Gemara, or elsewhere in learning, v'omah hochi amrinan hasam, and he says, we said such a thing over there, v'loyomah hochi amamar, rather than saying, Rebbe, you said this over there, or even in third person, this is what the Rebbe said. Like he's making himself, like he's on equal level to his Rebbe, so therefore, so that's an example of apikoros, again, Meloshin Pokar, Meloshin, he's treating his Rebbe's covered as Hefker, and saying as though he's on an equal level with his Rebbe. The Rambam, by the way, in Hilchos Teshuvah has a somewhat different definition of these various terms, min and apikoros and so on forth. The Rambam famously formulated the 13 principles, the Yud Gimel Ikrim of Yiddishkeit. So the Rambam explains, for example, so you have a min, or somebody who believes, who doesn't believe certain basic fundamental things about Hashem. For example, he thinks that, he claims that Hashem, that there's no Hashem, that there are two, that he has a body, and so on and so forth. So the Rambam explains all of those would make a person, all of those would brand a person as a min. And then you have an apikoros. He talks about you have the various other beliefs that a yid has to have, that Hashem, that there is nevuah, and that Moshe Rabbeinu's nevuah is unique, and so on and so forth. So the Rambam defines these various terms in terms of the Yud Gimel Ikrim. So now, aside from that, we're saying that a person who shows a lack of respect for his Rebbe is also branded as an apikoros. Rava gives a different example. He's going, Hani Deve Binyamin Asya. For example, the people of the family of Binyamin the doctor, or a person who lived in his times.
Asking is a doctor.
Okay. Yeah. Da'amri, where these people say, Maya Hani Lon Rabbanon, what good are the Chachamim doing for us? Now, they're not saying, like we said before, that they don't protect the whole world. They recognize that their schos does. But they're saying, we don't need them in order to learn Torah. We can learn Torah independently. The Chachamim have never permitted for us a raven or forbidden us a dove, meaning a raven is an example of a treif, a bird. A dove is an example of a kosher, a bird, meaning in other words, these people from Binyamin the doctor's family are saying, who needs the Chachamim to interpret the Torah for us? We can understand it ourselves, we don't need them. A similar kind of thing, by the way, in Kiddushin, it tells the story over there of how Yana and Malach became a tzaduki. He has a tzaduki friend, a Rosha named Elazar ben Pu'ira, who convinces him that there's a whole story over there where the Chachamim seemingly showed a lack of respect for Yanai, and then this Elazar tells him, go kill the Chachamim, and Yanai says, yeah, but who's going to teach Torah to the people? And Elazar says, who needs them? The Torah is rolled up in the corner, anybody can go and learn it. And then at that point, Yanai accepted that and became a tzaduki, because otherwise he would have said, what about Torah Shabbat Peh? So here these people from Binyamin Asya's family are taking sort of the same view. We can learn Torah ourselves. We don't need the Chachamim not telling us anything new. So the Gemara tells, so in this connection, Rava Kiavim Maisi Trefta Debe Binyamin Kamein. Now, nevertheless, this family of Binyamin the doctor, they weren't openly, they were saying this kind of thing. There was still, the fact is, they were still from Yidden, and they were bringing their Shilas to the Rav. So when they would bring them a Shila in Hilchus Trefus, Kiavim Chosib Ataimila Hetera, if he found reason to be mocked through the animal, Omalahu, he would tell them, following up on what they had said, Techazu. Have a look. Look at this. I'm being matu to you, a raven. Here, you guys brought this shaila to me. You thought there might be a reason to say it treif, but I, being the Talmud Chacham, the Rav of the city, I know that it's kosher. So therefore, here, you're asking what good did the Talmud Chacham do for us? They never permitted us a raven. Here you go. Here's an example of without the Talmud Chacham, you would have thought that this is like a raven and also to you. And if he found a reason... And if he found a reason to say that's Osir, then he would tell them, here you see that I'm asking you a dove. So in other words, he would tell them over and over, he would stress to them, you're thinking you don't need the Chachamim, and you can learn and you can figure out everything in Yiddishkeit on your own, but you see from this very fact that I'm sometimes counterintuitively saying what's kosher and what's treif, where you would have thought otherwise, then you see you very much need the Talmud Chachamim. Okay, so that's another definition. Rapapa gives another definition of apikoros. De Omar Hani Rabbanon, where a person says in a dismissive tone of voice, those rabbis. So he means, for example, now Rashi explains he should say, for example, Rabbi Senu Shabamakim Ploini. He should be saying our rabbis in such and such a place. Those rabbis over there is like a disrespectful expression. Rashi explains another explanation. Rashi says is that there's a difference in Aramaic. There's two words for those. There's two different words for those. You have hani, which is a more derogatory expression, like those guys, and then you have a word hanhu, which is a more respectful expression. So Rashi says if he's going to be talking about chachamim in third person, he should use the word hanhu rabbanim, which is a more respectful way. The chachamim in English, you don't really have that distinction. I don't think so much, but whatever. The point is that hanhu is a more respectful way of saying those chachamim, rather than hani, which would be more like those guys. So the Gemara tells Rapapa Ishtali, one time Rapapa forgot himself, and he uses that expression hani rabbanon, and the result was he fasted to have kapara from the Eibishter for that, for speaking as he himself had said. That's a disrespectful way of speaking of the chachamim. The Gemara tells another example of this. Lady Bar Shmuel and Rav Huna Bar Chiya have become a sakni mit pochas sifri debei Rabbi Yehuda. These two chachamim, Lady Bar Shmuel and Rav Huna Bar Chiya, one time are making mantlach and cloth covers for the svarim in the yeshiva of Rabbi Yehuda. We know that the takana midrabanan and gzeira midrabanan, that when a person touches a bear sefer Torah or other kisses of Kodesh, then it makes his hands tame. So therefore, they're preparing mitpochas, they're preparing cloths for them so that people can handle the svarim without touching them with their bare hands. Ki motu Megillas Esther, when they came to Megillas Esther, and they were wondering whether they need to make a mantle for it, Amri, they said, Megillas Esther leboi mitpachas, does this Megillas Esther not require a mitpachas? No, they're not. That's the point. They're not asking it as a question. They're rather saying it as a. They're saying it almost like as a rhetorical question. This one doesn't need a mitpachas, like with the understanding. Does it? So Amalahu, so Rabbi Yehuda tells them, Ki hai gavne nami mechsi ki afkirusa. This is also considered a certain efkirus, is also considered a little bit like afikursus to speak like that. So what does that mean? Rashi says you should have asked, does this need or does this not need? When you're saying this doesn't need, does it? It sounds like you've already decided it for yourself in the presence of your Rebbe, and therefore it's not respectful to do that way. In fact, Marsha points out, we find elsewhere in Shas, a machlokas, whether Megillas Esther is Metameh as a Yadayim or not. So they shouldn't just be deciding on one side of that machlokas on their own. They should be asking, well, what is the halacha in that machlokas? The Yad Ramah gives another point as well. The saying ha, Megillas Esther, this Megillas Esther is the singular of Hani, and just like we said, to say Hani Rabbanan is disrespectful, the same way to say Ha Megillas Esther is also a disrespectful way of speaking of the Sefer. There would be another word in Aramaic that you could use for this one. He was not saying it's actual Afkeris, but it's saying at least Merci Ki Afkeris, it appears like Afkeris. Okay, yet another definition of Apkoris, Rab Nachman Omrak Zakore Rabbi Bishmoy. This refers to a person who calls his Rebbe by his first name. Now, if he says Rebbe Ploini, then that's fine, but if he just says his Rebbe's first name without the Rebbe, then that's a problem. De Omer Rabbi Yochanan, as in fact we find Rabbi Yochanan says, but Neman Nanish Gechazi, why was Gechazi punished? Now Gechazi was punished first with Tzaraas, which we're going to talk about later in the Perek, details about that. Later on, as we learned in the Mishnah, he's one of the ones that it says that he lost his place in Olam Habo. So we're not talking about over here so much why he got the tzaras. That's clear from the psukim, because you have the whole story with Naaman over there, where he chased after Naaman and told him that we need food, that we need money and clothing for Tamadum, who just joined the yeshiva and really took it for himself. So the fact that he got tzaras is more understandable why he did that. The question really is why he lost his place in Olam Habo. That's the Yad Ramah explains that. Anyway, so the question is, why is that? And the reason is because he called his Rebbe by his first name, Shenema, as we find a pasuk where the king of the ten Shvatim and Gehazi are standing together and talking, and then they're talking about the Nisim that Elisha did, and Gehazi had just told him about the nest where Elisha was Machaya Mesim, and then the woman and her son, who were the subjects of the story, show up. Vayom Gehazi, Adoni Amelach, my Lord the King, Zoysa Isha, this is the woman, Vizebna, and this is her son, Asher Hechia Elisha, that Elisha revived. What do you mean Elisha? My Rebbe Elisha. So therefore, so we see he was called a Rabbi Bishmai. So therefore, he lost his place in Elamabah for that. With that said, there are Mephoshim who understand that we are referring to the Tzaras as well. The fact that he got the Tzaras was primarily because of the whole story of Naaman, but then this Pasuk is after that as well. But we see that he had a habit, we see if he did that afterwards, he must have had that habit before as well of calling his Rebbe by his first name, and therefore for that he got the Tzaras in the first place. Elisha treated him that harshly and gave him Tzaras and so forth. So there are actually in Halacha, there's quite a bit of discussion about the ins and outs of this, it is fine to, again, it is fine, we're saying over here, if he puts a title in front of it, but in addition, for example, the Rambam writes, if a person's Rebbe has an unusual name, then he shouldn't be using that name even for other people. He would have to be Meshaneh, the same thing with his father. A person has his Rebbe's name, you know, Kloinimus or Todrus or one of those unusual names or whatever, then he can't call somebody else by that name as well. He'd have to change that when he's calling somebody else by that name. And then there's quite a bit of discussion among Rishonim and Achronim about the details behind this. Maybe even, in fact, that Amnon says that what about in the presence of his Rebbe? What about if his Rebbe is named Rebbe Avraham? Is he allowed to call somebody else Avraham in front of his Rebbe? The Taz says maybe not. Maybe the rare name would be even when his Rebbe is not present, and the non-rare name would be only when his Rebbe is present. So there's quite a bit of discussion back and forth about different details about these dinim. And the same thing applies as well to a person's father as well, where also if he's going to mention his father or his mother's name, he has to preface it with a title. The Gemara says that here is more examples of apikorsis, of acting in a careless way towards the covered of the Torah and of Tamar HaChamim. The Gemara says, Yosef Rabbi Yumiya Kamedir of Zera. Rabbi Yumiya one time was sitting as a Talmud in front of Rabbi Zera. The Yosef Akama, Rabbi Zera was given the following Jerusha. In the future, when Mashiach comes, Hashem is going to make a stream flow out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and by the banks of this river are going to grow all kinds of delicious fruits. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, now the Pesukim in Yechezkel describe this river. There are other Nevi'im who describe it in less detail, but Yechezkel gives the most detailed description of it. He doesn't actually explicitly say that it comes out of the base Kodesh HaKadoshim. He just mentions that he sees it coming out of one of the gates of the Azara. The Gemara in Yoma explains that it starts out in the Kodesh HaKadoshim and it gets wider and wider as it goes along. Anyway, Shenema, as the Pasuk says, by this stream on the two banks of it, there will grow all kinds of fruit trees. Lo yibol aleihu. These fruit trees will be special. Their leaves will never fall off. They will never cease to give fruit. Every month they'll produce new fruit. Because the water of it comes from the Mesa Mikdash, so therefore it has special properties. The fruit of this tree will be for people to eat. And the leaves of it will be for healing. And the Gemara is going to explain soon what kind of healing. So now, So Rabbi Yirmiyah is listening to Rabbi Zera teaching this. Omalei Hahu Sava, a certain old Talmud Chacham who was also present, says, Yishar, you said well, Yeshakoyach, V'chein Omer Rabbi Yechanan, and Rabbi Yechanan says the same thing, Yishar. Omalei, Rabbi Yirmiyah or Rabbi Zera. So Rabbi Yirmiyah asks Rabbi Zera, this old person is one of the Talmudim. Is he supposed to be talking to you like that? Ki hai gavna mechze afkerusa. Is such a thing considered hefkerus? Is it considered apikorsis? Like he's saying, first, he's saying Yishar, like I myself am approving of what you said, and Rabbi Yochanan said like that as well. So, So maybe he should be first quoting Rabbi Yochanan rather than his own opinion. Amalei Rabbi Zera says no. Ho hai siyur kamasaya leir loch. No, he's coming to support what I said or what you said. So therefore, so there's nothing wrong with that. It's not considered up the courses to say that way. Ella ishmiya loch. So Rabbi Zera continues to Rabbi Yirmiyah. The fact that you asked seems to imply that you were under the impression that such a thing is considered as chaos, so it must be, if you heard what you, hoshmielach, what you must have heard is as follows, a slightly different case. Here is an example. Rabbi Yochanan one time was sitting and darshening. Also, we learned this in Baba Basra. Also, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lahavi Avonim Tovus Magolius, Shein Shloshim Al Shloshim Amos. In the future, Hashem is going to bring precious stones and pearls that are 30 by 30 Amos in size. V'chokik Behen Eser, Berum Esrim. He's going to carve out holes in them 10 by 20 Amos, which is the size of the gates of the Beis Mikdash and the size of the gates of Yerushalayim. Umamin, Mashari Yerushalayim, and then he's going to set them up. Those are going to be the gates of Yerushalayim, Ma'osid Lavoi. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, V'samti Kadchoid Shimshay Sayach, as the Pasuk says, yeah, I'll make your windows be out of kadkoid, which is a type of precious stone, as Gemara in Baba Basra, there says there are two opinions, what it is, and Hashem says, Levi Kedain or Kedain, it'll be like both opinions. And your gates will be made out of Avne Ektoch. So we're dashing the simple meaning of Avne Ektoch is a type of precious stones. But the word Kodach, Kuf Dalet Ches, means to drill. So it means that Hashem is going to be drilling and carving out holes in these gigantic stones to make the gates of Yerushalayim. So this was Rabbi Yochanan was doubting this. The significance of 10 by 20 is in fact the size of the gates of Yerushalayim, the 30, that he doesn't say why Dafka 30, there's a number of different points about it. Ben Yehoyada makes a point about it that you have the Yud of Shem Avaya is Gematria 10, the milui of it, Yud Vav Dalad equals 20, and the combination then equals 30, so therefore, so you have 30 represents a certain Shlemos, and you have different other points about the, there's a lot of places where it talks about that the number 3 represents a Shlemos, which is why, for example, you have 3 psukim in Birkas Koyanim, and times 10 means a greater degree of Shlemos, and there's a lot of different points that are made, what the significance is of Dafka, of the figure 30 by 30. In any case, Rabbi Yochanan was dashing this. Liglig olav oisa Talmud. A certain Talmud mocked him. The Omar, he says, hashtag kebeis adit silsala loy meshkechina. Nowadays, we can't find precious stones of anywhere near that size, not even the size of the egg of a silsala, which is a type of small bird. You're telling us, Rabbi Yochanan, that in the future such a gigantic precious stones are going to exist, so he didn't believe it.
Hashem's going to find it, too.
Fine, but the Talmud is arguing, in other words, that ein kochodesh tachas hashemesh, basically. There's nothing new under the sun, so if nowadays we can't even find precious stones that are anywhere near that size, how are such precious stones going to exist lost and lovely? Well, the Gemara continues, l'yomim fligas finoste v'yam. Eventually, this Talmud one time went on a sea voyage. Chazinu l'malachei asharis. He saw malachei asharis, the commandery, avonim tovus and algolias. He saw them carving out precious stones and pearls, 30 by 30, and making in them these holes of 10 by 20. Omelahu hani l'man. So he asked the malachim, what is this for? Amri, and they answered, Osir HaKadosh Baruch Hu amin mashari Yerushalayim, that Hashem is going to put them up in the gates of Yerushalayim. When he got back from his trip, again he found Rabbi Yochanan sitting and davening and teaching. Omalei, the Talmud says, Rebbe Drosh, Rebbe Daushin, V'lochon Noel Lidrosh, it's very suitable and fitting for you to Daushin, Keshem Sha'amarta, Kach Reisi, exactly what you said is what I saw, I actually saw the Malachim doing this. You can see, by the way, as much as this guy is a lowlife and a mechutzah, if you still say, I mean, the fact that he's seeing and talking with Malachim, and then he was a Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan in the first place, yeah, he must have been, he wasn't stamming nobody. Anyway, Omoloi, but Rabbi Yochanan says to him, Reika, you empty person, im loira isa loi haimanta, and if you hadn't seen it with your own eyes, you wouldn't believe it, malag legal dibre chachamim after, you're somebody who mocks words of chachamim. Rabbi Yochanan put his eyes on him, and turned him into a pile of bones. You have that in a number of places in Shas, where it means, in other words, like the person, as if the person has been dead for a long time. Like you have, in other words, you can have a person who just recently died, and his corpse is still fresh, and then you have like this, where a person is like as if he's been dead for a long time. Because in other words, when the Talmud Chacham gives him a look like that, it takes away his entire chayus. Okay. So therefore, in other words, Reb Zera is telling Reb Yirmiya, when you hear somebody who does like that, who says to the Talmid Chacham, you know what, it's a good thing what you're saying, I saw it with my own eyes, that would be an example of Hafkeiros like his Talmud. But for example, here, the Hahu Sava telling me, or telling you, depending on how we understand who it was that said the previous teaching, when he told him Yishar, that's not considered Hafkeiros, that's fine, okay. That's fine to do, that's backing him up, yeah. So the Gemara says, Maisvi, I have a contradiction. So you're telling me that these gates are going to be made out of stones that are 30 by 30. By the way, nowadays, Taka, it becomes even easier to understand. Nowadays, they have, they can make diamonds in the lab, they can make other kinds of things like that. So you can imagine that the Eibishter will have a malachim set up, or has them already, setting up a lab and then making these gigantic stones. So the Gemara says, Maisi. A pasuk says, "Va'olach eschem kaimimius." Hashem says, "I will make you walk kaimimius with an upright stance." So what does that mean? Rameyer Omer Masayim Amar. Rameyer says that means in the future people are going to be 200 amas tall because kaimimius is an expression of a double koima. The Gemara explains that elsewhere that Adam Rishon, even after the Chet Etzadas, was 100 amos tall. So we're going to have Kaimim Mius double that, which is 200. The Maharal explains in various places that a lot of these numbers in the Gemara many times are meant to be symbolic. What we mean is, in other words, 10, again, represents a number of shleimus. 100 represents a shleimus within that shleimus. You have the 10 kosos and nefesh, the 10 spheres, each of them incorporating aspects of the other 10, so therefore 100 represents a certain degree of completion. So what we mean is Adam Rishon, even after the Chet Eitz Hadas, had a tremendous completion. He was complete in every way. And therefore, his height can be represented by the number 100. And therefore, we're saying the law said, "Lovely, people are going to go even beyond that and have 200." Says Rameyer. The Kishtei Kermis for Automatician, like the two heights of Automatician. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Meya Amar, Rabbi Yehuda says people will be 100 Amas tall, Kenegra Hechel the Koislav, the size of the height of the Hechel and its walls, which are 100 Amas tall. Shenema, as the apostle says, Shebeneinu Kinetim Mugudolim Binurehem, that our sons are like young, newly planted trees that are grown even when they're young. Bnei Senu, fully grown even when they're young. Bnei Senu, our daughters, Kizovius, will be like the corn. Kizovius Mechutovus will be like the carved out corner pillars of the Beis Mikdash. Tavnis Hechel, the image of the Hechel. The Hechel was 100 amas tall, so we're saying that they will be like the corners of the Hechel, which are 100 amas tall. So we see, therefore, says Rabbi Yehuda, that people will be 100 amas tall.
To be exact height as uncomfortably exact that is a ceiling.
Ah, so well, that's the point. Well, so the Hechel itself can be even taller. The third Beis Hamikdash, actually, the Pasuk doesn't actually say how tall the Hechel is going to be in the third Beis Hamikdash. Rashi actually does learn on the Pesukim over there that it means it's going to be 100, just like the second Beis Hamikdash. So according to him, you'd have to say maybe it'll be a little bit taller, yeah, so people's heads don't bump the ceiling. The Malbim says over there, actually, that given that the Pasuk says, "Very Isil Abayis Goyvah Soviv Soviv," I saw that the building was very tall. He says, no, it's going to be far taller than that. The point is, according to either opinion, how are people walking through gates that are 10 by 20 when they're going to be 100 or 200 amas tall? And the answer is, Rabbi Yochanan, l'kavi d'beis zika. Rabbi Yochanan is not talking about the gates themselves, he's talking about the ventilation holes you have around the gates in a wall you have to have inside the city. And people are cooking and baking and doing other things that cause smoke, and you have to have the smoke has to go out somewhere, so you have ventilation holes cut into the walls and into the gates to allow that smoke to escape, and therefore those are going to be 10 by 20 amas. The actual gates themselves. Yeah, but even so, you still have it's true, above it's open, but still, it's helpful to have them in the walls as well. The Gemara mentions in Megillah that they had a similar kind of thing, in the city of Rome, that in the walls of it also, they had vents and ventilation holes like that cut out. Apparently, that was, when you have a walled city, apparently you need that kind of thing. Those will be. You also have, besides, also you have sunlight and fresh air come through them, etc. So anyway, but the gates themselves are going to be much taller, because again, if people are 100 or 200 amas tall, they're going to need much taller gates to go through. Okay. Now, we said before about the stream that comes out of the Beis Hamikdash. We said you're going to have the trees growing by it. We said, the leaves will be for trufa. So, my l'srufa, what does that word in the Pasuk mean? So, Rav Yitzchak bar Vadimi v'Rav Chista. Machlokas of the Amoraim, what the word means. Chad Omer, Chad Omer, Lahatur Peshal Maila. both of them agree that the word l'tzrufa is short for the words l'hatir peh, to open up the mouth. And the reason is, Ben Yehoyada points out, because otherwise it could have said l'rufua, which would just mean for healing. So l'tzrufa is a combination of the words l'hatir peh. So chadom l'hatir peh shomayla, one says it means to open up the mouth above. When you have a person is mute and is unable to speak properly, then these leaves, he'll eat from these leaves, and it'll make him able to speak. The other one says it means to open the lower mouth, which means the rechem, the womb, that you have a woman who's infertile and eats from it, then she'll be able to conceive and have children. They said also that there were other Amiroyim who discussed about there were Tanoyim who discussed it as well. Chizki Amalata Pel Ilman or Bakapora Amalata Pel Koris. Same idea. Rabbi Yochanan Omar. Ben Yehoyada talks about over here up in Kabbalah, you have this Yesod and there's Malchus and there's a connection between them. Peshal Mata represents the Yesod, Peshal Maila, like we have in Pasach Aliyah, represents the mouth with which we learn Torah. So they're talking about which one the leaves are going to help with Yesod or Malchus respectively. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, L'srufa Mamash. Rabbi Yochanan says, means L'srufa, means exactly what it means, like for healing. So the Gemara says, my L'srufa. Fine, but what does that word, L'srufa, mean? Why does that say L'rufua? Another gear says, actually, that Rabbi Yochanan is saying, not L'srufa, but L'terapia, which is like in English, you have the word therapy. So he's understanding that it means something of cure. So Rabbi Shmuel Bar Achmeni Amar, L'toya ponim shal balei apeh. Means that these leaves will help with the appearance of the ones of the masters of the mouth. You have Talmid Chachamim who learn Torah with their mouth, and they go to tremendous trouble over it, and they're not always so attractive. They blacken their faces over Torah, as the Gemara says elsewhere, because they don't eat properly. They stay up all night learning Torah, so they look drawn and haggard in the morning. So all this kind of thing is going to be, these leaves will help that they'll have a beautiful face, through eating these leaves. So the Gemara says, in this connection, Dorosh of Yehuda Reb Simon, called a Mashchir Pona Valdivet Torah Ba'olam Hazeh, a person who blackens his face about words of Torah in this world, he doesn't care about his appearance, he doesn't care about his comfort, and all, and he fakifzich and learning Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mavhik Zivoy La'olam Habah, Hashem will make him that his face will shine La'olam Habah, Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Mar Ehu Kalavonin, his appearance is like the Lavonin, Bochu Ka'arozim, choice, and then selected among the cedar trees. So here, now the previous pasuk had said, a couple of psukim earlier, it says shchoris ka'orim. So the person who learns Torah black like a raven, like he doesn't care about his appearance, and he spends his time learning Torah. So now the pasuk continues that Hashem, who is Mar'ehu Kalavonin, Hashem who is, so to speak, powerful, and Hashem who is powerful and then beautiful like the Lavonin and like the cedar trees over there, as the pasuk continues, chikei mamsakim, his palace, the way of his words of speech are sweet. So therefore, so we see, in other words, that now Hashem is going to provide the Talmid Chacham a sweet way of making them beautiful, namely these leaves that we were talking about from the trees. And the Gemara continues in this connection. A person who starves himself over words of Torah in this world, and again he fartifs in learning Torah and doesn't worry about how he's making parnasa and anything like that. Hakadosh Baruch Hu masviyo la'olam haba. Hashem will satisfy him in olam haba. Shenema, as the pasuk says, yuviyun midyashin beisecha. They will be satisfied from the fatness of your house. The nachal adonachal sashkem. And you will give them to drink from the river of your sweetness. Now, Rashi explains, the previous psukim are talking about people who hunger themselves over Torah. Maharsha says, where exactly do we see that? And the answer is, because before that, you have in the pasuk, the people who protect themselves in the shadow of your wings. Earlier in the Masechta, we learned that there were the people in the Talmidim in Rabbi Yehuda's times who were very, very poor, and six of them would have to share one talus. So like each of them is only covering himself with one corner of the talus. Primarily, they're covering themselves with Hashem's protection. So therefore, so we see they're Mariv Asmal, Divrei Torah, they're very, very poor, and nevertheless, they spend their whole time learning Torah, and therefore now the Pasuk is saying, Yuvyun Midyashin Beisecha, that Hashem will satisfy their hunger and give them great plenty.
Geshem
literally means the fatty ashes, but more generally it means the fatness and the fatness and the deliciousness. Yeah. So the Gemara continues in this vein about the schar of tzaddikim. Ki osir of Gimi, when Rav Gimi came from Eretz Yisrael, Omar, he said, osir HaKadosh Baruch Hu, litin l'chol tzaddik v'tzaddik meloy oimsoi. In the future, Hashem is going to give every tzaddik his handful, his fistful, so to speak, Hashem's fistful of goodness, which of course is much more than any of us could even handle. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, meloy oimsoi literally means the amount that he can bear. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Baruch Hashem, yoim yoim yamas lanu, blessed is Hashem, every day yamas, he burdens us, with us, hakel Yeshua senu selah, Hashem who saves us forever. So we see, in other words, that the word yamas is related to oimsoi, so every day Hashem is giving a tzaddik oimsoi, Hashem's handful of goodness. But Abaye says, how could you say that? Hashem's hand is much greater than the entire world. The pasuk is, mi modad b'sholei mayim. Who is it that measured out the water with sholei, with his footsteps, the shamayim and the heavens by zeres tikein? He set up with his zeres. A zeres is a half an amma. So to speak, the entire heavens is only the size of half of the length of Hashem's arm, so to speak. So in other words, therefore Hashem's Hashem's handful is going to be much bigger than the entire world. So how could Hashem be giving an entire handful of goodness to every tzaddik every day?
Well, this is lost love.
It's all lost in love, but still, Abaye is bothered by the fact that still, if we're talking about Hashem giving reward to the tzaddikim, we're still talking about a time when there's an olam. So in that case, then it means that it still has to a certain extent be limited by the limitations of the olam. Benio Yoda has a whole explanation over here, but Kabbalah, that the Meloy Oimsoi is five things referring to Chesed, Gvura Tiferes, Netzach, and Hoid, and Abaye is asking him that you have the person is an Olam Kotten, how would he be able to take such a tremendous thing as the outflow from those five spheres? Omalei, sort of Dini answers in my time of the Shrichas Bagadda, why don't you spend time learning also words of Agadda? If you were to learn Agadda, you would have the answer to what you're saying. De'ambi ma'rova m'shmeidu rova b'amori, they say in the West, in Eretz Yisrael, in the name of Rav Bamori, also that Kodesh Baruch Hu litim l'chol tzaddik v'tzaddik shloish meis v'asara olamos. In the future, Hashem is going to give every tzaddik 310 worlds. Shenema, as the pasuk says, l'hanchil oy havayesh, the Torah personified says to give as to bequeath to those who love me yesh, where yesh is gematria 310. But it's the same amale, and I will fill up their storehouses. So in other words, in short, every tzaddik is going to have 310 worlds. So there, he can put all that benefit, all that great benefit that Hashem is giving him. Yes, all world is too large for it, but he has 310 olamos to put it into. Why the number 310? There are an enormous number of explanations among different mefarshim. A lot of interesting, first of all, that Rambam explains that the word yesh itself means something substantial. So it means, in other words, that it represents that Hashem is going to give the tzaddikim a very substantial reward. But there's a lot of different points. There's 613 mitzvahs d'oraisa and 7 d'rabbanan. A person has a person himself. A man is half the neshama, and his wife is the other half. So between the two of them, they have the schar for 620 mitzvahs. So each one gets 310. Another point is when the Jewish people conquered Eretz Yisrael, there were 31 kings. That was like 1/10 of what we're going to get. Lost at Lavoi. So in the future, instead of 31, it's going to be 310. And then there's an explanation that we know when a person, for example, eats truma, b'shoigim, then he has to pay an extra choymesh, and there's a number of other examples where a person pays an extra choymesh, an extra 25% above and beyond the value. So the same way, a person keeps 248 mitzvahs asay, the choymesh of that comes out to 62, 248 plus 62 equals 310. So like Hashem, so to speak, is paying back a yid, the keren plus the choymesh for all the mitzvahs he did. Now, an interesting thing is that this is not just a statement of Rav Amori. This is actually in the last Mishnah in Masechta Uchsin, the last Mishnah of Shas, says exactly this. So why does Abaye not know this, and why does Rav Dimi have to point it out to him, and in the name of Rav Amori? So there is actually an answer. So there's a couple of explanations on it. The Noda Behuda gives an explanation that the Mishnah had used the word lahanchil l'chol tzaddik v'tzaddik. He was saying litin l'chol tzaddik v'tzaddik. Lahanchil would be that it means, in other words, that the person is zoicha to those things like as a nachla. In other words, he himself. What about, for example, his children, his grandchildren may not be tzaddikim like he was, but nevertheless they'll earn it in his chus. So in other words, he won't use the whole 310 himself. So he'll use some of them and he'll leave it. for his descendants. But now, Rav Bamori is saying Litten that Hashem will give to the tzaddik himself, so therefore he himself will have that place to put all the greatness, all the goodness that Hashem gives him. And then Ben Yehoyada makes a different point. Lahanchil would suggest that we're talking about that it means that he'll have a portion of every one of the worlds. Litten Loi suggests that he's going to get the entire one of each one of those worlds. Okay. The Gemara continues. Tanya of Meir Omer, b'midah she'odam moded moded in loy. In the measure that a person measures out, the way a person treats other people, moded in loy, then Hashem measures to him. Dichtim, as we find by the punishment of the goyim, the Mitzrayim and the other nations who mistreated the Jewish people, b'sasa'a, when you send them away to the vena, then you argue and you fight against them. So b'sasa'a, m'loshen sa'a, to saw, so because of each saw that they did, they get a saw of punishment back. The shalcha, when you send them away, when you decide it's time to send them out of the world, to the venah and you fight against them. Omod Rabbi Yeshua b'chi efshal loy makein, but again, Rabbi Yeshua asks, how could that be? So you're telling me that a person gives a handful of tzedakah to a poor person in this world, then Hashem is going to give him a handful in olam haba. We just said before, the pasuk says that Hashem spread out the whole heavens with his zeres, meaning in other words, that the whole heavens is far greater, that the whole world is far greater than Hashem's hand is far greater than the whole world, and therefore how can a person take that much? And so Rameo answers, "V'ata iata omer kein." Why don't you think that? You don't think that Hashem is able to give a person tremendously more than he can receive? Consider, "Ezehi midah meruba." Which midah of Hashem is greater? Says Rameo, "Midah tova meruba, midas tova meruba, or midas peronus." Which one is greater? Hashem's midah of reward or of punishment? Hevei emi midah tova. Hashem's midah of reward is always greater. Hashem always gives more reward than punishment. As we find, Rashi brings the famous limud that Hashem's midah tova is 500 times as much as midah sporanus. Now, consider the midah tova ksiv. When it comes to Hashem's good midah, when Hashem gave them on ksiv vayitzav shchokem mimoal, Hashem commanded the heavens above, the dalse shamayim plasach, and he opened up the doors of heaven. Shchokem is a higher level of shamayim. Vayamter aleim mon lechol, and he rained down on them mon to eat. So we see that Hashem opened up the doors of Shemayim, of Midas Peronus, to Omer, Va'arubas to Shemayim Niftahu. When it comes to punishment, by the Mabel, it says the windows of heaven open. Now the Gemara explains elsewhere, when it brings us, that there were four windows to a door. So therefore, so it means that the amount of mon that fell was four times as much as the amount of water that fell during the Mabel. So similarly, the midas peronus chsiv. Similarly, when it comes to Hashem's punishment of the rishoyim la'osid lavo, the last pasuk of Yeshaya says the yotzu v'ro v'figure ha'noshem ha'poshim bi. People will go out and they'll see the dead bodies of the people of the goyim who deliberately rebelled against Hashem. Ki salatam loisamos, the wolves that are eating them will never die. The isham loisichve, and the fire that's consuming them, the fire of Gehenim, will never go out. V'hoyu deiroin l'chol basur, and there'll be an abhorrent, disgusting thing to anybody who sees them. So now, what do you mean they're going to be burning eternally? V'aloi odam moshi, that's boi bo'ur, boi l'mazeh. A person sticks his finger into fire in this world. Miyad nichva, he right away gets burnt. He can't keep his finger there for too long, because then the finger is gone. So what are you telling me that these bodies are going to continue burning after a short time? They're reduced to ashes and there's nothing more to burn. Just like Hashem is going to give the Rishoyim the strength to receive their punishment, they're going to get punished continuously, and their bodies are never going to disappear. They're constantly going to be punished. In the same way, Hashem gives koyach to the tzaddikim to receive their reward, so don't be bothered by the fact that the handful of Hashem is larger than the entire world, because Hashem increases their capacity to do it even more so than he increases the capacity of the Rishoyim to receive their punishment. We said in the Mishnah, another example of somebody, you know, the Mishnah had said, Rabbi Akiva Omer, Afakurib, a Sforim Achitzonim, also a person who reads Sforim Achitzonim, is also a place who loses his Chelek Olam Haba. So, Tana, the Sifrit Tzedukim. So we learn in a Braisa, Sforim Achitzonim means the books of Tzedukim. This is actually a change of the sense, so it's really supposed to be Sifrit Minim. Rashi was also censored over here. The original statement in Rashi was books of Galochim, so like books like the Christian scriptures and whatever. A person is not supposed to be reading those. You have rare Tamar Chachamim who read them because they have to know Damash and Tashim, Lapikoros, that kind of thing. But in general, a person is not supposed to be reading them. The printed version of Rashi over here says Shekofin VeKeochai, they deny Hashem. So these are not books that a person should be reading. And it means also, you know, so it includes books of other religions. And includes books of other kinds of kfira, like evolution and different kinds of things like that. These are all included in that category. Things that books that take away a person's mind and make them think that there are other philosophies other than Torah that are true. Rabbi Yosef Omar, the Sefer Ben Sira, Nami also the Mikri. Rabbi Yosef says another thing that you're not allowed to read is Sefer Ben Sira. Ben Sira was a Yid who lived near the beginning of the second Mishnah Mikdash. It's brought in some places. He was a grandson of Yirmiyahu HaNavi, conceived under somewhat unusual circumstances. Those circumstances are actually brought in halacha in connection with certain dinim of artificial insemination nowadays. The story is that Yirmiyahu was motzi zera in a bathtub, and later on his daughter bathed in that bathtub and became pregnant. Anyway, this Ben Sira was the result. So he wrote... He wrote a sefer called Ben Sira. It's a poetic style book. It's somewhat in the style of Sefer Mishlei, a large part of it. He saw Shimon HaTzadik personally. He has a beautiful poem describing Shimon HaTzadik's glory when he went out of the Kodesh HaKadoshim on Yom Kippur. The P of Ko'el HaNimtach that we say on Yom Kippur is based on that. Anyway, this is Sefer Ben Sira. Most of it is in the style of Sefer Mishlei. It's admonitions and advice for life. So as the Gemara is going to go on to say, there are things in it that are silly and that a Yid shouldn't be reading. Some of the Mefarshim explain also that in particular, because it was written so close after the end of the time of Tanakh, and it's written very much in the style of some of the Sfarim of Tanakh, therefore the Chachamim were concerned people might think it is actually a part of Tanakh. And that's another reason why the Chachamim didn't, why Rabbi Yosef doesn't want people reading it. What eventually happened with it actually was, because the Chachamim discouraged people from reading it, the original Sefer was written in Lashon Kodesh, and there were Lashon Kodesh and Aramaic together, whatever. Later on, a grandson of Ben Sira translated into Greek. Eventually, over time, because Jews stopped learning it, they stopped copying it, so eventually the original was lost, and all they had was the Greek translation. The Goyim have it as part of their Bible. Eventually, they found fragments of the original in the Cairo Geniza and the Dead Sea Scrolls. By now, they have pretty much the whole. By now, they have pretty much the whole original of it reconstructed. Anyway, so Rabbi Yosef is saying you shouldn't read that book. Amalei Abai my time. Abai says, why not? What's wrong with Sefer Ben Sira? Is it because, for example, you have the following statement in it? Loy tintish gildena me'udne, don't take off the skin of a fish, and gildena is a tiny, unimportant kind of fish, don't take off the skin even from its ear, or don't begin from the ear when you're taking off the skin, delelezo mashkil chavla, so that the skin doesn't go to waste, and you're gonna say that this is, ridiculous statement, and why should anybody be learning such a thing? Abaya says why, and Ben Sira continues, Elot sli yosef benura, rather roast the fish in fire, the echobe tauken gritzin, and eat it together with two loaves of bread. So it seems like dvarim betalim. It seems like nonsense. So Abaya says that's not such a problem. Imi kashde, if he means the actual simple meaning of that statement, nothing wrong with it. Baraisinami kosovai sashkas as eitzah. The Torah tells us bal tashkas. So he's saying don't waste, even though it's a tiny, unimportant fish. And you think, so I'll take off the skin, big deal. But nevertheless, you're saying that the skin is edible too. Don't waste any useful part of it. Imidrosha, and if Ben Sira means it as a metaphorical statement, then what he's saying, Urach Ara Kamashmalon, he's telling us the proper way to act, Livul Shaloika Dauka, that a man should not have relations with his wife, Shaloika Dauka, meaning it was the same way as it's unusual to strip the skin off a fish. In this way, the same way it's unnatural and unusual to do Shaloika Dauka, and therefore you shouldn't do it. And then Yehoyada also adds, in other words, that the point is, then the rest of it would be, you don't want, when he says the skin shouldn't go to waste, represents that a person shouldn't be motzi zera levatola, and then roast it in fire, meaning follow the way it says in the Torah, which is compared to fire, and eat it together with two loaves of bread, meaning in other words that you'll have in the schus of that, you'll have children, you'll have sons and daughters, and mimakayim mitzvah approval. So therefore, Rabbi is saying nothing wrong with that statement, that we should ban Sefer Ben Sira because of it. The Elamishum Dechtiba, or Belamishum Dechtiv, are you going to say there's another statement in Ben Sira? Basla Avia Matmonis Shav, a daughter is for her father an empty treasure. Meaning, Marashal says, a person would think he has a daughter, he has a treasure. He's able to receive money for kiddushin for her. You have various other things where there are payments as a result of a daughter. So he thinks that he has a windfall over here. But in truth, it's shav, because he's worried about her his entire life. He's so afraid of what's going to happen to her that the father can't sleep at night. But Katnusa, when she's little, Shemati Spata, he has reason to be concerned. She might be seduced into Znus. She's too little to know better. But Narusa, when she becomes a Naira, Shematizna, she herself, on her own, might be Mizana. Bogra, when she becomes a Bagera, Shemalitinosin, and he has to be worried she might not get married. Nisus, and once she gets married, Shemalilabonim, she might not have children. His Kina, and once she gets older, Shematasik Shosim, and then he has to be concerned that she might do Kishuf, which was a common thing for women to do in those days. So you're telling me that this is something ridiculous for Ben Sira to be saying, and a daughter is a Bracha, but no, says Abaya also. Horabon and Nami Amrua, the Chacham also say something similar. It's impossible for the world to exist without both men and women. Nevertheless, Asher Misha Bonim Schorim, happy is a person whose children are males. Olo, the Misha Bonim Nekevis, and woe to a person whose children are daughters. Now, that doesn't mean a person does have to have daughters in order to be a kind pruvu, but it means in particular where he has. So Maharshal explains that it means, in other words, that he should have daughters for pruvu, but he shouldn't necessarily have too many daughters because sometimes daughters can be a headache. Yeah. So we see that we see the Chama saying the same thing as Ben Sira, just in different words. Ela Mishum Dixiv, is it because Ben Sira says, Loi toil davia belivach, don't allow worry to enter your heart, de gubre giborin kotel davia, because even the strongest of the strong have been killed by worry. So you're going to say that's something wrong, because a person should have a certain worry and a certain concern about the future in his heart. No, Shlomo Amra, we find that Shlomo says the same thing in Mishlei. De'oga b'leiv ish yashchena. When a person worry in a person's heart, yashchena. The simple meaning of yashchena, Mephoshim on the Pasuk, explains things that causes it to bow down. It causes his heart to be bowed and then bent out of shape. But the Gemara says, Rav Ami v'Rabasi, chad omer yisichena midaita. One darshens the word yashchena as yisichena midaita. He should distract himself and get it out of his heart. The other one says he should tell it over to other people and they'll help him get, they'll commiserate with him and help him get out of it. Either way, we see that yes, worry in a person's heart is something not to have, and therefore Ben Sira is quite right in saying that. The Elamish from Dichtiv, you're going to say another thing that Ben Sira says, Mena Rabim Mitoch Besecha, keep many people out of your house, V'lo Yakol Tovia Besecha, don't bring everybody into your house. In other words, be selective in who you bring into your house. So the Rabim, Marashar explains, in other words, you might have a Rishoyim among them, and you don't want them to know your secrets. So if Rabim need you, then talk to them outside the house. But even if the lawyer called Tovia Besecha, don't bring everybody even to the outside of your house. So in other words, be selective in whom you're allowing in and around your house. But the whole Rebbe Nami Omra, Rebbe says the same thing. A person should not have a lot of friends in his house. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Ish Reim, a person with a lot of friends, Lehisreya. And eventually causes things bad because he ends up arguing with them. Well, the history also means like to be destructive. They cause problems in the house. So therefore, there's nothing wrong with that statement of Ben Sira. Ella mishum dichtiv. No, it's rather like this. In Ben Sira, you have the following statement: Zaldikon, a person who has a thin beard. Kurtimon is a sharp kind of person. Abdikon, a person with a thick beard. Sichson is a foolish person. Dinafach bekase, when a person blows on the foam in his cup to get rid of the foam before he drinks it. Loit sochi, then you know he's not thirsty, because otherwise he would just drink without doing that first. Omar, and if a person says, "B'may eichol lachma," with what should I eat this bread? I can't just eat this bread by itself. I need a relish to go along with it. Lachma stav mine, then take away the bread from him because he's obviously not that hungry. So now, Ben Sira saying such things is obviously something silly, and therefore we don't want to be reading Sefer Ben Sira and come across these silly statements, and people are going to think that they're a genuine part of Torah. With that said, though, Ben Yehoyada defines over here Ramazim in what it represents, that, but still, Abaya is saying that at least on the surface there's enough of a silliness in it, and here, for example, as far as the part where he says, with what will I eat my bread, take the bread away from him, means a person who's saying, you want to teach him Torah. He tells you, first give me gashmi and stick of bread, and then kamachin Torah, then don't bother teaching him Torah, because he obviously lacks bitachon. Nevertheless, we're saying that's a silly thing, because yeah, you do have to take care of a person's gashmius before you take care of a person's ruchnius. He explains also as far as the he explains also that the zal dekon means a person who treats his beard carelessly and shaves it. So kurtaman, also a deeper meaning of it is he's cutting off his ruchnistika source, because the hairs of the beard are a source of goodness and parnasa and everything for the person. And in any case, the point is that and he continues with another thing. Ben Sido continues with more statements. Mandi isle ma'abarta bedikne, a person who has a passage in his beard. Sometimes you have a person whose beard is in two major pieces, and you have like an empty space between them. So a person like that, kula amala yachlile, nobody will be able to keep up with him, because he's obviously a very crafty kind of person. He's constantly stroking his chin with his ideas that he's coming up with, and therefore his beard ends up getting divided in two. So these kinds of things are silly things. Again, each of them does have deeper meanings behind it, Ben Yehoyada points out, but nevertheless, Abaya is saying at least people are going to misunderstand them and think that they actually mean something but pastures, and therefore we don't want people learning it. However, as we'll continue learning tomorrow, there are positive things in Sefer Ben Sira, and those we're allowed to look at near. The Gemara is going to quote, as we'll learn tomorrow, several positive statements from Ben Sira that we are allowed to learn. So we're just saying, don't learn it indiscriminately and think that it's part of Kismet HaKodesh or something, but by all means, look at the good things in it and do, and then the Talmud HaChacham at least can do that and learn and be able to distinguish between the good and the silly over there and be able to learn things from it.